Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Los Tex-Maniacs have been a mainstay of San Antonio's conjunto scene since 1997. Their influence has spread beyond the confines of the city to national and international acclaim. They're Grammy Award winners and have played in various projects, including with the Rolling Stones. Tex-Maniacs founder Max Baca and the legendary accordionist Flaco Jimenez were featured on the Stones' 1994 Voodoo Lounge album. Baca is the frontman of Los Tex-Maniacs. His main instrument is the bajo sexto, a Mexican 12-string guitar with a broad body, shorter neck, thicker strings, and deeper sound. Baca and his bandmate, accordionist and nephew Josh Baca, joined Texas Public Radio's Jack Morgan for a wide-ranging conversation about their life as musicians with Los Tex-Maniacs and Max's early days in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I started when I was five. You know, my father taught me how to play two songs on the accordion, and that was Monterey Polka, Monterey, and In the Mood, Glenn Miller's In the Mood. So I learned those two songs first, and then after that, as I was growing up, by the time I was seven, I was playing bass, and I was dad's bass player when I was 7 years old in his conjunto back in New Mexico in the early 70s. We'd play all the different pueblos, you know, and sometimes go to different reservations in Arizona. And my dad, you know, he kind of forced me and my brother to play a little bit. And so when we would get off of school, we'd run home, me and my brother, and we had one accordion. Whoever would touch the accordion first would have to practice 30 minutes. And then the other guy would practice after that, you know. Yeah, but we'd have to practice, you know. That was before we did our homework, anything. So I don't remember doing homework at all, actually.
So that was your homework.
Yeah, it was my homework, yeah. So, yeah. So
well, it served you well.
That's all I've done all my life, you know. So I'm 57, and I can honestly say I've been playing music for 50 years.
When did you first find your way onto a stage?
Well, my dad sat me on a chair at the Calderon Ballroom in Phoenix, and when I was 5 years old, he sat me on a chair to play the two songs that he taught me. And so I have photos. It was the cameras that would flash, the Polaroid. But I don't think it was ever recorded other than maybe somebody had one of them tape recorders with a cassette tape or something, you know. But that would have been nice to listen to that now, you know. After when I got to play the bajo sexto, my dad took us to see Flaco Jimenez. We really got excited and really got enthused after we saw Flaco and his conjunto play. And so me and my brother, that's what we wanted to do, you know. And then we'd seen Flaco on television, you know, and Austin City Limits or Saturday Night Live, one of those shows. And then my dad finally took us to Lubbock, Texas to see Flaco play. We would, you know, stand there at the stage just admiring, you know. There was a bajo player that he had. His name was Oscar Theus. He was a master at his instrument, man, and that was my idol. I just idolized that guy. And 20 years later, I got to tour with him and Flaco overseas, you know, the different tours in Spain and Germany, Holland, Sweden, Switzerland.
Now, I've read your book, Crossing Borders. Excellent read.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
Fun stuff. You really speak about Flaco.
He's like a dad to me. Flaco's like a father to me, man, you know. And he calls me mijo, you know, and that touches me. And I've spent half of my life with Flaco. Like I said, I'm 57. I've spent 25, 30 years playing with Flaco as his bass player and then later on as his bajo sexto player, too, you know. So
you speak of him, you know, in very admiring terms, mm-hmm. as a musician, as a person, as a mentor. But you also speak of him as a singular talent. What separates him from all of those other folks? What makes him rise above in your mind? When you hear his music, you go, damn.
Well, his music, his style of accordion playing is unique. He's got magic. Ese amor que yo amé tan profundo Era el único amor en el mundo Que siempre adoraba con loca pasión He's got some kind of magic that it's hard to describe. You can only hear it and feel it. So that's his musical side that I'm attracted to, you know. But on a personal side, it's his humbleness. He's very humble, and he never turns a fan down. You know, if they want an autograph or a picture, you know, he'll stay there till the end, or he'll take the time to show me how to do some stuff on the bajo sexto or something, you know, in the hotel room or after the gig or something. He'll get my bajo and, hey, check this out, and then he'll teach me a few things. He's just a humble, genuine person.
You've talked about Flaco as a person and as a musician, but what is it that separates him from all of the other guys playing squeeze box in the world? What elevates his music and everything?
Culture. He grew up in San Antonio, and growing up in San Antonio, I guess in the era that Flaco was, you know, it was hard to be Chicano. It was hard to be brown. And that comes out in his music, because the accordion has been in every genre of music in the world. Flaco introduced the Tex-Mex Chicano sound to the country, to country music, to blues, to rock, to Zydeco, to whatever it is. It's that Texas sound. You know, that's what separates him from a lot of other accordionists. Nowadays, I don't know who's who. Nowadays, I can't tell who's playing the accordion. They're great accordionists. I just don't know what they're doing. But also, the music was for the people. If Flaco got on stage, you heard it. You knew it was Flaco. Rubén Vela, all the pioneers. So Flaco comes from, I guess you would say, part of the creation of conjunto music. So he's a creator.
And I got to say that what you were describing at the beginning, at least, where he's come from hard times, where it was tough being brown, you're describing soul, to my mind.
That's where he comes from. Yeah.
He developed soul by going through hard times and suffering, and then you bring that soul to your music.
Yeah, they're not understanding, like, how, as a child, you know, how come they don't like us? They don't like you because you're brown. You can't say Jimenez. You just got to say Jimenez. Your name is Leo, not Leonardo. Coming from that, you know, that hurts, you know, your soul a little bit, because, like, this is our people. Like, your parents created you. It's a form of a god. And God creates people and creates living things. Your parents created a living thing, and they took the time to name you.
To me, it's like them saying, you're not worth the effort of me learning to say your name.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I can describe Flaco's music. It comes from the soul. It comes from what he ate every day, where he slept every day, what birds were playing at the moment of life when he woke up in the morning. Those are the notes that he heard throughout his creation. So when he plays, that's subconsciously in his head, and he's transcribing it to his music.
What you're describing, to my mind, from my era, I'm older, far older than you, I'm hearing Jimi Hendrix, I'm hearing Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Exactly.
You know, it's like he's channeling the universe through his instrument.
And all those guys, like you just named Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan, they all grew up on the same land. So the river source and the food source of this Providence we live in Texas, I guess, it's all the same style, whether you're black or white. Jimi Hendrix was a black man, Stevie Ray Vaughan was a white man, and Flaco was a Mexican, Chicano. And all three of those guys have the same authenticity as each other.
Let's go back to the bajo sexto for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't raised on this kind of music at all. When I first heard it, though, I was like, I play guitar, and I recognized that it wasn't a guitar, but there was something.
It looks like a guitar.
It looks like one. But I didn't see one until finally I saw a video of it on stage, and I was like, I was just drawn in.
Well, you know, the bajo sexto, and, you know, nobody knows exactly when it came out or who invented it. All we have in the history is from San Antonio, Martin Macias. He was from Spain. His family migrated to Paracho, Michoacán, Mexico. And when he was a teenager, this is a story that Martin's son, Alberto, had told me. And he said that when Martin was young, he learned how to make guitars from a luthier from Paracho, Michoacán, Mexico. So they wanted to get the sound of the accordion, the button diatonic accordion, the accompaniment sound. How do we get that sound in a guitar? So they ended up putting bigger, thicker strings. So you have a bass string pretty much, you know. You got a bass string on here that's like an actual 90 gauge or 97, 98 gauge string, you know. And then you have the higher octave and the lower octave, higher and low octaves, right? High octave, low octave. And then the last three sets are all in unison. So you got three sets of octaves and three sets of unison. And on the accompaniment part of the accordion, you have the same thing. You have the bass notes, and then you have the rhythm notes.
I guess the design for all the instruments was the concept of being louder and stronger. Because when Texas conjunto music first started, it was pretty much the fiddle and the bajo sexto before the accordion entered to this region.
And it was before PA systems.
Yeah, before PA systems.
Yeah, they didn't have no speakers.
They wanted that, but like he said earlier, it derived from the oud, which was from the Middle East, into Spain through the slave trade, you know, the India and all that.
And it was called la oud.
And then they turned it, because the Spaniards wanted to correct everything, so they added frets, and it was la oud. Then from there, you know, there's different regions of Mexico and different places all over that have double-stringed instruments that emulate or are like kind of the same concept as the bajo sexto.
Guitarra dobles.
Guitarra dobles. So Lead Belly played a guitarra doble, which was a 12-string guitar, which the
it had a little thicker strings than a regular guitar, but not like a bajo sexto. And so the Lidia Mendoza played a guitarra doble in the beginning of her career, and then when she got older, she couldn't play the strings, so she went to the regular 12-string guitar. Then Mr. Macias migrated to San Antonio, and he was working at a furniture store somewhere here in San Antonio, on the
Acosta.
South Side. Maybe Acosta. And started making bajos there at the furniture store with partners with Acosta. And then eventually went on his own and opened his own shop and started making bajos. And then even nowadays, people still use this design. This is Spanish inlay here. That rope design is Spanish inlay, you know, and then these... So, and these were all handmade. This one's handmade, and it has aged wood, dry aged wood. This particular bajo was made for me from his son, Alberto, the second generation. I have one from all three generations. But Martin Macias was the one that started making these. And people all over the world, they make bajos, but they use the same design as Mr. Macias did, you know. And if you have a Martin Macias bajo sexto, it's like having a Stradivarius. There was only one Martin Macias, you know, and I'm fortunate to have one or two of those. I had two, but one is at the in display at the Smithsonian National History Museum.
And the other one, I got to ask, how did you earn that distinction?
I got a phone call from one of the directors of the. So they just opened up a wing at the Smithsonian National History Museum dedicated to instruments. So they didn't have a bajo sexto, and so I got a phone call from the director, and he asked if I would sell one of my bajos, and he wanted the one that I had recorded with the Rolling Stones, but I didn't sell it to Keith Richards. Keith Richards wanted to buy it from me. I didn't sell it to him. Say, I can't sell that bajo, man. It's got too much, you know, history and value, you know, and so I kept that one, but I had another one that was the same, pretty much identical. That was a 1972 Martin Macias. So I sold them that one, and they made a display, and they put my picture in the bajo and the history of it and so forth.
Max Baca is the founder of Los Tex-Maniacs. Josh Baca is his bandmate, accordionist, and nephew. They're talking with Texas Public Radio's arts and culture reporter Jack Morgan about their career, their music, and their influences. When we come back, the Rolling Stones' Keith Richards wanted to buy Max Baca's bajo sexto.
Name your price, man. Just name it. So I didn't name my price. It never happened.
The stories continue next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Musician Max Baca's life was defined by music. He's a third-generation musician, along with his brother Jimmy. They formed the band Los Hermanos Baca and gained fame on the New Mexico circuit. Max Baca went on to play for the Texas Tornadoes and later founded Los Tex-Maniacs. He's toured with San Antonio Conjunto legend Flaco Jimenez and has recorded with the Rolling Stones. He's also won a Grammy with Los Tex-Maniacs and became the youngest person inducted into the Conjunto Music Hall of Fame. There's a whole lot more in between point A and point Z. And to fill in those empty spaces, Max Baca is joined by his brother's son, accordionist Josh Baca, to share a few stories from the road. They're talking today with Texas Public Radio's arts and culture reporter Jack Morgan. Jack asks them about that 1994 recording session with the Rolling Stones that led to an offer most people couldn't refuse, but Max did.
Me and Flaco were on tour with a group called the Rock Angels, and we were in L.A., and it was just me and Flaco, and we were special guests with this band. We were there doing the sound check early in the afternoon, so we were backstage there, you know, and so then we get a phone call from at the venue, and the guy brings us a phone, and he says, hey, they're looking for Flaco Jimenez. And it was Don Was, producer that produced the album. Hey, this is Don Was. He goes, I'm looking for Mr. Jimenez, Flaco Jimenez. I said, yeah, he's right here. And he goes, we were very interested in having him come and record on a track with the Rolling Stones. I'm producing an album for them. I said, okay, let me see. So that's Flaco, it's Don Was. He wants to see if you want to record a track with the Rolling Stones. Flaco smoked his cigarette. Sure. He goes, he gets a phone. He goes, the guy's giving them information. And then all of a sudden he says, well, you know, I have my bajo sexto player, Max Baca, and if you want the complete Tex-Mex sound that you're looking for, you have to have the bajo sexto. He says, bring him too. We want him too. That's how that came about, you know, and we were off the next day, and they were in the studio. They were at A&M Studios in Hollywood. So we went to the studio, and we walked in. You know, Charlie Watts and Ronnie Woods was walking out with their wives, you know, and we kind of shook their hands walking in, you know, and then when we got into the control room, like here, Don was on this where I'm sitting, and then Josh is sitting was Mick Jagger, and then there was the engineer on the other side of Josh, and then in the corner over there, Keith Richards was sitting there smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, and so we walked in, hello, they shook our hands, and Keith just waved like that, and so I pulled out my bajo. Once I got the bajo out, Keith Richards stood up, and his eyes just went like, wow, what? And he came around the council, and he says, wow, what is that? And I said, it's a bajo sexto. He goes, wow, it's amazing. It's beautiful. He goes, can I see it? And I said, sure. So I gave it to him like that, you know, and he got it. And he's looking at it. He's all, wow, this is gorgeous, you know, and beautiful. He's looking at it like this, you know, and he's smoking a cigarette, you know. And he's just talking to me. That cigarette's just lit, you know, and he's not puffing on it. It's just lit, you know, and he's talking. And he says, man, can I try it? And I said, sure. So he tried to play it like a guitar, you know. So I told him, you know, just drop down and, you know, on the... And he got it. He goes, oh, okay. And about that time, boop, the cherry of the cigarette just landed right on the top of it. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. He wiped it like that. I said, that's okay. That's okay. He goes, man, this is so gorgeous. He goes, I want this. I want it. He goes, will you sell it to me? And I said, oh, man, Mr. Richards. I said, my father gave me that, you know, when I was younger, you know. Oh, sentimental value. I understand. He goes, name your price. And I was like, oh, man, I'm thinking. He caught me totally off guard, man. So I'm thinking, what's my price? I mean, I'm $20,000, $100,000, $150,000, what, you know, million? What do I do? So I have these figures going through my head, you know. And I said, well, and he goes, name your price, man. Just name it. So I didn't name my price. It never happened. So I didn't sell it to him. And I just told him that I couldn't, you know, and my dad, you know, he would be pretty hurt with me if I did, you know. And, oh, he understood, no problem. He signed an autograph for me or whatever. And when I got home from the tour, I told my dad. My dad called me, you know, for not selling it to him. You know, he goes, we could have bought the damn factory. He's a millionaire, you know. And so, Keith, if you're listening, you know, that bajo you wanted to buy, now it's for sale. We did the songs called Sweethearts Together. It's on the Voodoo Lounge album. You know, it's like a bolero, really. It's got the bolero rhythm to it, you know.
Now, you are not a purist. You do a lot of traditional stuff, but then you go country and you do some rock stuff. Do you have people that tell you, hey, you need to color within the lines?
I had one guy, one particular man, and he, and God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore, and his name was Chris Strodwich from our Hooli Records. He's documented so many genres of music, you know, blues, Cajun, country, conjunto, norteño.
He was the man responsible for taking the blues to Europe.
And he just recently passed away a couple years ago, I think. Every band that was on his label was unique. He recorded. He got to record Santiago, Flaco's daddy. He got to record Santiago Jr. He's recorded Flaco. We were doing the Folk Alliance, and we were showcasing the Tex-Maniacs, and we had 20 minutes to do our thing, you know. So, you know, being young and, hey, we should do, you know, rock out and this and that, you know. We played a traditional polka, and then we traded Xotis or Redova, and then we rocked out with something different, you know. And so when I got off stage, Chris comes up to me, says, hey, man. He goes, why are you playing that rock and roll stuff, man? Just be yourself and play what you are and what you do and the pure, beautiful music, conjuntoism. And I started thinking, and he's right. He's absolutely right. So he was the first guy to ever tell me that, you know. And so, and then, of course, when I met Dan Sheehy, he was the director for Smithsonian Folkways. Me and my brother, throughout the years, we would record recordings, and I would send it to him because I always wanted to be on the Smithsonian Folkways label because I really dug the collection of that they had, you know. And I'd call him to see if he got it, and he says, yeah, Max, but you need a concept, man. You need a concept. It's just not quite there. So for years, maybe 3, 4, 5 years later, I'd send him another one, you know, and the same thing. He'd say, you could need a concept, So after like 3, 4 different times, finally I formed the Tex-Maniacs. And so we got invited to play at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. So while we were playing the festival, we've got off stage with just a 4-piece conjunto, and then Mr. Sheehy came up to me and says, now you have a concept.
What was the difference?
I thought maybe, you know, modernized, you know, maybe some keyboards here and there, and, you know, and just it's new, it's fresh. I learned through life, just be who you are and just play who you are. And he came and recorded us. We recorded the first album in 2009, and it won us an American Grammy. And it was just songs that we've played all my life, you know. Just it was called Borders y Bailes, just for being yourself and being who we are, and let just roll the tape and be yourself. Earned us an American Grammy.
Now, your biography, a good read, is called Crossing Borders. Can you talk about the title? Why did you come up with Crossing Borders?
Well, I guess because at the time we had just released Cruzando Borders, our fourth Smithsonian Folkways recording. Craig Harris, who also he works in radio, he was interviewing me one day because we were going to play at the Rhythm and Roots Festival. And so I'm telling him the stories, and, you know, he's asking me questions. And then he says, Max, we need to write a book on you, man. He writes books. And I said, wow, that'd be a dream come true, man. He goes, no, man, your stories are amazing, man. He goes, give me a couple weeks, man, and let me see if I could find a publisher that would be interested, you know. Well, he calls me 2 days later, and he says, hey, guess what? We have two publishers that are interested. The University of New Mexico is one of them. Who do you want to go with? And I said, I think that would be the best one to go with. So we went with the University of New Mexico. They published my book. And Craig Harris, he's the one that came over to my house, and he interviewed me for like a week. He'd go on the road with us, the band, everything, and he'd ride with us in the band. And of course he went to visit Flaco, and he made phone calls to like David Hidalgo from Los Lobos, and then he called my mother, and he interviewed so many people, you know, and my colleagues, my bandmates, you know, and my, you know, my nephew and everybody he interviewed, and, you know, and all that comes out in the book. Talks about Tex-Mex, where it comes from, conjunto, where it comes from, and, you know, talks a little bit about the bands that I played with, of course, the Super 7, and, of course, the Texas Tornadoes, Doug Somm, Augie Myers, Laco, and Freddie Fender, and my journey through the music, what it's brought me, my journey through music has brought me where I'm at now.
So. All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room. You had a great opportunity to learn at the feet of the master. I mean, how cool is that? Is anybody else in this world had the opportunity to learn as much from Flaco Jimenez as you have?
being able to be taught by Flaco Jimenez and the influence and being around him, and it's an honor and it's a privilege, and I think sometimes it's kind of a dream. As a child, he was my superhero. He was my Superman, my Spider-Man. He was my Batman. I didn't really matter about all that other stuff when I was a kid. I just wanted to be Flaco. I'd even put a gum wrapper on my tooth because Flaco has an F gold tooth in his backside, and when he smiles, it would shine. So when I was younger, like, put on the vest and do all this, me and my siblings or my friends, we pretend to be bands.
Like a big, it was either be Flaco or Richie Valens.
Yeah, Flaco or Richie. I went through my phases. Right now I'm in my Flaco phase, so I've been listening to a lot of Flaco again. Went back to like all the songs that I haven't played in a while, and I didn't realize that. I forgot that so many records Flaco has recorded, and they're all so great. Flaco has sat with me and showed me stuff once in a while when I was a kid. Like, I'd come over, and I already learned whatever Flaco was playing. I was, hey, Flaco, check it out, and I'll show him how he was, what I learned. And all the notes were right, but he's just like, I did it like this. And it's just a different attitude. I can't really explain it. I could just show you. Maybe okay. You can feel it. This is a song, and I was playing it. And then it. So I was doing. Right. And Flaco goes, the notes are right, it's right. When I played it. It's a different feel. Oh, yeah. And then learning about the tuning of the accordion. You know, the tuning of the accordions, Flaco has done all my repair and all my tuning on all my accordions, man.
Since Flaco is your accordion repair guy?
He's my accordion repair guy. And and it's very unique, different repairs. So if you picked up any of my accordions that I have, to the length of the buttons, the height of the buttons, the size of the thumb strap, the length of the hand strap, everything on it is exactly identical to how Flaco Jimenez would have his accordion if he was my age, if he was 33. That's how he would have his accordion. I come from a lot of so many different influences. Like, I've come from rock, blues, country, New Mexico music, country music. I'm not even Texan, and I'm playing Texas music, representing this stuff all over the world. Thank God. And it's all because of Flaco. For whatever reason, his hands speak, and it says it's Flaco. And I go, hey, Flaco, you did this pisada, because he calls them pisadas, which is a riff or a lick on the accordion. You did this pisada on this song, and it came out great. That's awesome. And Flaco goes, yeah, but what I meant to do was this. So when the song is playing, da, 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 dee, and he gets the accordion, he goes, I want it to do this. And he did a lick, and I go, wow, but I couldn't catch it. You know, it was in the moment. Nobody's ever heard what he's meant to do. Because when I play live, I also always add the stuff he didn't do. So they say, man, that's different. People think it's Josh Baca, which it is, but it's actually Flaco giving me, like, I meant to do this instead of this. But it's all about the ear. So like Flaco Jimenez tunes my accordions, and I've seen him single-handedly sit there without a tuner and tune it with just a scriper and the reed in his mouth. Boop, he'll blow the reed. Ah, that's sharp.
And those reeds are really tedious, man. It's really hard to do. You got to have a lot of patience.
I don't know if anyone knows this, but Flaco Jimenez has perfect pitch. Perfect pitch. He can tell you what key you're talking in. He can tell you what key you're... Right now, whatever that machine is vibrating, your desk, he could tell you what key that's in. He could tune in a guitar from nothing all the way perfect. Tune
it. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen him get my bajo. We got off the plane. You know, I had to detune it. So when I got it out, he goes, let me see it. He did it. And no tuner. Just he started, and he tuned it, man.
Wow.
Perfect.
His influence is such a big part, and it's such an honor and privilege to be able to hang with him, you know.
Also,
theoretically, he's the only reason why I'm sitting in this San Antonio station with you, via meeting my grandfather, taking my uncle under his wing, and then becoming friends with our family. You know, that was one of the only reasons why I'm here, is because of Flaco's influence and giving some freaking Albuquerque boys a chance to be something in this music that we love, you know.
You also happen to have the luck to have the kind of the greatest uncle around.
Throughout the years, you know, growing up, Los Hermanos Baca were always around. My uncle was always around. He had his bajos all the time, or guitars, or drums, or whatever. My grandfather at his house had a rehearsal room in the back, and they had drums and keyboards and all kinds of stuff. And they were always practicing. They were always playing. And I always was just attracted to the sound.
I would bring up Josh when me and my brother were playing, and he was like 5 years old and with that toy accordion, you know, and called up, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring up my little nephew." And my brother said, "No, what are you doing? He don't know how to play." And I said, "Yeah, this is how he can learn, you know." And he goes, "No, we got to do a show." And I said, "This is going to be a show, believe me." And so we call up Josh, and he wasn't embarrassed or nothing, man. So he was like, "Okay, I'm ready to go. Let's do this, you know." "Okay, you ready, Josh?" And so we'd put a microphone right there and bring the microphone down to him, you know, and me and my brother start playing, and we'd bring the sound down, and then Josh would start singing and playing the accordion, well, you know, to what we were doing, you know. But he was natural. He got it. He learned it from my father, from his dad.
In this world, we all live off of vibration, and our bodies are made of electricity, and we have vibration and electricity vibrating through our body all the time. So the accordion eases my mind, eases the soul, you know. Because when it's quiet, that's when it's loud.
And there's just something about this, your instrument, you know, whether it's the accordion and me with the bajo, it's just like
they all have their own character.
Yes, they do. Oh. And when I put my bajo sexto on me, it's like it becomes part of me, man. And it's just like whatever I'm feeling at the moment is what's going to come out, you know. You know, whatever you can make it talk.
And with regards to playing an instrument, there's the knowledge of where to put your fingers to get which specific sound. And that takes a few years. But then there's knowing what ought to be played, which is a whole nother skill, right? You can know where to put your fingers to get a sound, but that doesn't tell you what you really ought to play, right?
That just comes from experience. You know, I would say experience, and also understanding who you are as a musician. For myself, I can honestly say I am an accordionist. That's what I do. But I can also play bajo, bass, drums. I sing. I play harmonica, whatever. I'm not a bajo player. I'm not a bass player. I'm not that. I am a lead accordion player. That's what I play. You know, so rhythm players and lead players, they hear things. They interpret things differently. You know, you leave the lead to the lead, leave the rhythm to the rhythm, and let us all join together at one, and it's going to be fine.
You should already know your instrument. You can never stop learning, but you should know your instrument and where to put your fingers, like you said. Then you ought to play, be who you are. That's what you ought to play.
Like Flaco says, Flaco tells me all the time, he's like, "Migo, you have the alegría, which is the happy, the spirit, the good, the man, it's attracting, it's spirit, and the know-how."
You can't buy that, can you?
It's one of those things. You either got it or you don't got it. You can't find it. The heart, the soul.
My dad or Flaco, you know, and other older musicians that I've had the honor to play with, they've always said, you know, you don't have to play all them riffs and just a bunch of stuff. Just play one note, if it's just one note, but feel that one note. It'll project out to the people.
That's Max Baca, founder and bajo sexto player with the San Antonio-based conjunto band Los Texmaniacs. He and his accordionist nephew, Josh Baca, were talking to TPR's arts and culture reporter, Jack Morgan. Los Texmaniacs are on the road, next playing the Celebrate Americana Festival at Idaho Falls, Idaho, April 18th. They're at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, April 24th, and are back in San Antonio, May 2nd, at Sam's Burger Joint. The Texmaniacs will also be making stops in Austin and Houston in May. Find out more at tpr.org. We wrap up the show with a song Max and Josh Baca recorded in our studios after their interview with Jack. You can hear the entire track at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marianne Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.